Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I am John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Tuesday, November 15, 2016. Internally displaced persons in Yei say they are not getting enough food.
We have food which are rotting in the field, whether being cassava, whatever it is, sweet potatoes, gourds, and so on. But the difficulty is how to access to bring home. When this food came, at least it has helped us.
And the U.S. Department of State is calling on the Kiir administration to respect the freedom of speech.
Such actions send the wrong message to the people of South Sudan, who are guaranteed the right of freedom of information and expression by their own laws and constitution.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The UN Refugee Agency says it is distributing life-saving items to more than 6,000 vulnerable families trapped by fighting in Yei River State over the last 6 months. The internally displaced persons welcome the relief aid but say they should be allowed to return to their villages to harvest the food that they cultivated. Tito Justin reports for VOA from Juba.
UN State officials say more than 10,000 families were displaced from their homes in Yei River County after fighting broke out between government forces and armed opposition groups aligned to former First Vice President Riek Machar. UN agencies say humanitarian conditions were bad because aid workers were unable to access the area due to insecurity. Anna Roba and her 7 children are some of the displaced villagers who received food assistance from UN Share this week. Roba's family was displaced 2 months ago from Daystar, an area about 2 kilometers from Yei Town. Roba and her children now stay with relatives near the Episcopal Church of Sudan and South Sudan offices in Yei. Speaking in her native Kakwa language, Roba says she welcomes the food aid provided by UN Share, but worries about others still hiding in the bush.
I have a suggestion that if they are distributing these relief items, let's receive them because these items help us with other colleagues to be happy. It's not only you who receive will be happy. It needs brothers and sisters to get too. If anybody receives, I think there will be nothing bad. We don't want that others are sad and others are happy.
Mawa Frederick was displaced from Lopapa village near Yei along with 9 members of his family. He says the food ratios being provided to the IDPs are not enough. He says all he wants is access to his land so he can harvest the crops he has been growing.
We have food which are rotting in the field, whether being cassava, whatever it is, sweet potatoes, gourds, and so on. But the difficulty is how to access to bring home. When this food came, at least it has helped us.
Frederick says South Sudan leaders should restore peace so he can return to his village where he can lead a normal life without the sound of guns.
We need peace in our country so that we can also build our country, not always going to neighbors as if we are orphans, depending on uncles to brought us up. Like now, our children are going to get education outside. And meanwhile, we have even better services in the country. Mm-hmm. So my message is that let our leaders sit down and resolve the issue and bring peace to our country.
UNICEF is distributing blankets, sleeping mats, mosquito nets, and soaps to IDPs. Richard Ruati is UNICEF's assistant external relations officer for South Sudan. He is calling on the warring parties in Yei to cease hostilities to ensure a stable environment for humanitarian actors to reach vulnerable people in remote villages.
So we are all appealing to the government and the armed groups who are operating in some of the areas we are supposed to deliver services in, so to give corridor to humanitarian actors and the displaced persons to move freely. So we hope that things will improve much better than they are now.
Aid workers and local leaders say thousands of Yei residents were forced to flee to the neighboring Uganda and the Democratic Republic of Congo because of the rampant insecurity. The UN also say at least 100,000 Yei residents have been stranded within the town with no means of escape. For VOA News, I am Tito Justin in Juba.
iRadio remains shut down as talks between the management of the radio and government officials continue. National security operatives closed down the USAID-funded radio stations last week without explanation. National security operatives came to the radio and asked the management to hand over the keys to the studio. Observers in South Sudan and abroad are calling on the government to allow the station to resume broadcasting within days. Ayan Bior has more for VOA from Washington.
The silence emanating from iRadio studio could be heard and felt all the way in Washington yesterday when State Department spokeswoman Elizabeth Trudeau said its closure steps on basic human rights of listeners across the country.
Such actions send the wrong message to the people of South Sudan, who are guaranteed the right of freedom of information and expression by their own laws and constitution. As we've said many times, a society that's free, vibrant, and successful depends on the unrestricted flow of information and ideas through a free and independent press.
Trudeau says the State Department and the U.S. Embassy in Juba are aware of ongoing talks between iRadio and South Sudanese authorities. Maruthi Mutiga, an East African correspondent with the Committee to Protect Journalists, says the station should never have been shut down in the first place. He says it's the latest in a series of attempts by the government to obstruct the media's work. Mutiga says the victims of this act are the people who depend on iRadio's coverage on news and developments in South Sudan.
When you target a radio station as important as iRadio, you're essentially leaving people in darkness. You're leaving them without access to credible and independent information, which by all accounts is what iRadio has been offering. And we are urging the South Sudanese authorities to really stop this trend towards closing the space for the media to operate in South Sudan. This is exactly what they used to criticize in the administration in Khartoum, and it's extremely disappointing that the new authorities should take the same approach to media and censorship.
In mid-September, the Nation Mirror, a well-known newspaper in Juba, was closed by security agents after publishing a report by a U.S.-based rights group detailing corruption and misuse of public funds by government officials. The paper has not resumed publishing since its closure. Alfred Taban, the editor of the Juba Monitor, was arrested in mid-July after he wrote an opinion piece criticizing President Salva Kiir and former First Vice President Riek Machar, calling for their resignation. Taban was released on bail in late July, and his paper has since resumed publishing. But he says an attack on one media organization is a threat to all journalists in South Sudan.
We have condemned this act, and we think it is unconstitutional and is a threat to freedom of the media and of expression in South Sudan. We are therefore calling for the immediate reopening of iRadio as soon as possible.
In October, CPJ listed South Sudan as the fifth most dangerous place to be a journalist in their annual Global Impunity Index. The watchdog says the country has made no progress in ending impunity for crimes committed against journalists in 2016, and that local journalists covering corruption and politics represent about 95% of victims worldwide. South Sudan Communication Minister Michael Makuei could not be reached for comment despite repeated attempts by phone. Ayan Bior, VOA News, Washington.
Still in Juba, South Sudan's Minister of Justice says it is difficult to implement the rule of law in a country where many residents take the law into their hands. Paulina Wanawila Unango says cultural norms hamper efforts to implement the rule of law. Michael Atit has more for VOA News from Juba.
Justice Minister Wanawila says it is difficult to enforce the rule of law in a highly militarized country like South Sudan, affected by decades of armed conflict.
Most of our civilian population are armed, and that they take the law into their hands. The conflict that used to be done through what we used to know as wild weapon is now done with the firearms.
Wanawila says It will take years before South Sudan's leaders are able to enforce the rule of law in various communities across the country. He says revenge killings, blood compensation, and forced marriages prevent the police from arresting suspects and enforcing the country's laws.
Without people knowing that the law is the supreme governor of a modern state, they will still think that they have to apply the law according to their custom, traditions. And that will mean that taking the law into their hands.
Wanawila says some people use the customary courts because they are deeply rooted in their cultural traditions.
And some of the cases we have been handling has ended up by the whereby the victim is being taken out from Juba to the countryside with a warning that led the Minister of Justice and the chairman of the Human Rights Commission, let them follow us there in the village. You know what that means. So this is the mindset.
The minister is appealing to the officials from the United Nations Development Programme to train police officers, judges and lawyers to help enforce the rule of law in the country.
We are not being hopeless. We are just telling the truth and the fact that we need assistance in order to overcome those difficulties. We need assistance in order to harmonize our traditions to go with the statutory laws. We need an assistance in order to sensitize our citizens to know that a country cannot go out without the rule of law.
Kamil Kamaluddin is the UNDP country director. He pledged to support efforts to promote the rule of law in South Sudan.
This is very, very important. And that under the leadership of the chair of this forum, we will have opportunity to provide additional support to you in terms of setting the system up to realize the aims and objectives that are established in the terms of reference.
Earlier this year, the Justice Minister acknowledged that South Sudan's judiciary has no capacity to handle cases of atrocities committed during the violence in the country. Critics of the government and international rights groups have criticized the country's judiciary for lack of impartiality and transparency. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Juba.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, hundreds of South Sudanese children are being treated for malnutrition at a treatment center in Uganda. More on that when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
do you have any family or friends living overseas? And what do they tell you about where they live?
Okay, some say that they are working hard, especially those who go in Asia working hard like slaves, because they work from morning up to evening and they are not paid on a timely basis as they are paid in Europe.
They usually say things are difficult, it's not easy as we think it is.
I have one friend and I have one family member, and what they keep on telling me that things are not easy. But what I also don't understand, if things are not easy, then why are they not coming back home?
Yeah, I have my friend from works in Dubai. Also, he cries in Dubai, they suffer a lot. If you were ladies, they can use you without giving any money. So I know that.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. In our health segment today, we take a look at South Sudanese refugee children in Uganda. Health officials in refugee camps in northern Uganda say many children are malnourished because of widespread food shortages. The Medical Teams International has set up a clinic in one refugee settlement to help provide food supplement to hundreds of children of South Sudanese refugees. Mungome Devs Rwakarinj visited a nutrition treatment center in Uganda's Adjumani district and has this report from Kampala.
Dozens of women carrying their young children stand under the scorching sun as they wait to be served at Pagrinya 2 Health Center. The women have come to the health center to get food supplements for their children who are malnourished and tired. 38-year-old Agnes Aseya is waiting in line with some of her children. Speaking in Madi, she says most of her six children, including 2-year-old Pitia, have no food.
My child is always sick. He doesn't want to eat whenever you give him food except for soup. As you can see, his hair is straight and he's coughing. He has been dilating and doesn't want to play with his peers.
Aseya fled her home, Ilowa village, along the Juba Nimule Road when fighting erupted in the area in July. She says she has not been registered to receive food rations from WFP and must depend on Welwishers and wild fruits like mangoes they find in the bush. Aseya also collects firewood, which she sells to other refugees to earn money for food. She says she has seen other children who are given supplements get better. Lillian Auma has been receiving food supplements for her 14-month-old baby, James. Speaking in her native Madi language, she says her children were sick when she first arrived in Uganda.
Before I brought my child here, she used to cough. His hair was blown and he would suffer from disease like diarrhea almost every day. And he would not play with other children. But now he's healthy and has gained weight.
On this day, Auma has brought her child back to the center to receive more food supplements. Robert Atwai is a nutrition expert working with Medical Teams International, which provides health services to refugees in the camp. He says his organization helps children by providing nutritious food.
When we were opening up this camp too, majority of the children were severely acute malnourished, we call them SAM. As we continue with the program, we also enroll people who come when they are moderately acute malnourished mom.
He says more than 350 children have been enrolled for nutrition supplements in this camp. Atwai says a shortage of nutrients in the body makes children vulnerable to falling sick. He says children, when are malnourished or lose their appetite, they are put on intensive therapeutic feeding.
When somebody is malnourished, then it means the immune system is so low. So that person stands a higher chance of getting other infection. Since you find the immune system has gone down, so those conditions set in very fast, like coughing, diarrhea, which is very common here.
He says at least 1,000 children have been put on food supplements in both Nyumanzi and Pagrinya camps alone. Pregnant and lactating mothers have also been enrolled for therapeutic foods. For VOA News, I am Mugume, Davis Ruakarind in Kampala, Uganda.
A non-governmental organization in Uganda is giving hope to hundreds of cash-trapped South Sudanese refugees who have no source of income. Refuge and Hope International is providing skills training to urban refugees so they can become self-reliant. Simon Peter Apiku has more for VOA from Ugandan capital, Kampala.
Refuge and Hope International, an NGO funded by American church organizations, was established to help urban refugees rebuild their lives, achieve self-sufficiency, and become leaders in their communities. The faith-based group helps refugees from South Sudan, Sudan, Ethiopia, and other East African countries by offering opportunities in education and other career-based trainings. In 2010, Refuge and Hope International launched a training school in the Ugandan capital that offers courses in tailoring, cooking, computer studies, business entrepreneurship, Bible studies, and learning English. Valia Samson, a refugee from South Sudan, says she's glad she took the school's English language program.
I came here in Kampala, and then I don't know how to speak English or how to express myself in English. But we used to go to the church, South Sudanese church, and then we have some Americans come teaching us Bible study. Because of English we don't know, it's very difficult for us. They start to open for us a school.
After completing the course, Samson enrolled in the one-year tailoring course. Samson now teaches sewing and tailoring to other refugees. Her students, like Cecilia Lako, learn how to make shirts, trousers, dresses, and household items. Speaking in Arabic, Lako says she hopes to be self-reliant soon and return to South Sudan.
Sometimes I sew table clothes and get some money. That is why I choose tailoring. You can sew and sell clothes and earn some money. It is easier to make money in this way because there are no jobs.
Samson says taking professional courses at the school gives refugees like herself a chance to become economically independent.
But I see the benefit for the refugees here. Now they cannot be poor. They cannot ask from anyone. Now they can do something by themselves. And then some of them, now they have their shops. Others, they are sewing in their houses. They can pay their rent. They can take their children to school, even they can eat through that.
Samuel Kalama is the organization's communications officer. He says Refugee and Hope also helps students start up their own small businesses.
Like the sewing program. When they finish, the top students are actually given a sewing machine to go and start up something. And they're earning a living out of that.
Amiroso Isidoro is a graduate of the school who received a sewing machine at the end of her training. She says with the machine, she can now take care of her family.
Now I can sew the clothes, and even I have a customer, those when they come, I sew for them the clothes and give me money, and I can feed my children.
Job Ball is learning English at the Refuge and Hope School. He says the variety of courses helps refugees stand on their own 2 feet and be productive citizens.
They're teaching them different activities so that anyone go back to their country, they can be able to do something good for his future in their country.
Kalama says most of the students who complete the school's courses are successful.
There's a lady who started with English, went through the computer course, and she also did the business class. Right now, she owns a restaurant and a cyber cafe right here in Kansanga. And her business employs both refugees and locals. And she started small. Right now, her restaurant is one of the biggest restaurants in Kansanga right here.
About 600 students are enrolled at the Refugee and Hope School. Most of them are refugees from South Sudan. The Refugee and Hope also offers emotional and spiritual programs intended to help refugees reconcile their past so they can begin building their future. For VOA News, I'm Simon Peter Piku in Kampala, Uganda.
South Sudan's first Vice President, Taban Dengai, says the transitional government of national unity is beginning to implement a federal system of governance as stipulated in the peace agreement. Policy analysts, academics, and government officials met today at a workshop in Juba to develop policies that will align government programs with a federal system. Waki Simon Wudu has the story for VOA from Juba.
Richard K. Mula is the Minister for Federal Affairs. Mula says there must be political support from South Sudan's leaders in order to implement a federal system of government.
We believe that there is political accord to federalism from the population as well as from the political leadership. The second is that the structures to be adopted must be suitable. The levels of government, the number of units, the power and wealth-sharing arrangements.
Chapter 6 of the Agreement to Resolve Conflict in South Sudan requires the Transitional Government of National Unity to initiate a federal and a democratic system of government. That means the government must put in place federal policies which will later be incorporated into the permanent constitution of South Sudan. First Vice President Taban Dengai read a statement from President Salva Kiir saying the government is determined to implement federalism.
We believe that
even in a multi-ethnic, geographically widespread and underdeveloped environment like that of South Sudan, federalism would catapult the country development.
Guy says there is no time to continue debating the meaning of federalism.
In order to make a federalism system strong, government will devolve more powers and resources to the lower level government, that is states and counties. The system of federalism will be run on democratic principles where there is transparency and accountability. The autonomy of lower level of government is protected by the transitional constitution, and that will be further reinforced in the constitutional that is coming.
James Alechigarang is a senior economist at the Juba-based Ebony Center for Strategic Studies. Garang says discussions at the workshop should clearly define the powers of citizens at the lower government level as well as in the central government. For example, he says the debate over the central government interfering with the governance at the lower levels by removing a state governor should be clearly defined. He also says resources should be shared among states.
There has research and someone who has looked at the budget over the last 10 years. It has been the case that resources has not been shared equitably, especially with regard to what moves from the center to the state. So much has been spent in Juba and so little in the state. So I would like this workshop to clarify on this issue.
Garang says discussions at the workshop are not taking into account that. Only elite politicians and academics in Juba have been making decisions for all the states, and that is not the way federalism works. For VOA News, I am Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. Here is a recap of today's top stories with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Damme.
Thanks, John. The UN Refugee Agency, UNHCR, is distributing emergency items to more than 6,000 vulnerable families trapped by fighting in Yei River State over the past 6 months. They are internally displaced persons, and they say they welcome the relief aid but want to return to their home villages so they can harvest food they've planted and feed themselves. More than 10,000 families were displaced from their homes in Yei County after fighting broke out between the South Sudan Army and armed opposition groups aligned to former First Vice President Riek Machar. UN agencies say humanitarian conditions have deteriorated quickly since aid workers were unable to access the area because of rampant insecurity. Health officials in refugee camps in northern Uganda say many children are malnourished because of widespread food shortages. The Medical Teams International has set up a clinic in one refugee settlement camp in Uganda's Adjumani district to help provide food supplements to hundreds of children of South Sudanese refugees. 38-year-old Agnes Aseya at the camp says most of her six children, including her two-year-old, do not get enough food. She says he is always sick and doesn't want to eat. And finally, iRadio remains shut down while talks continue between station owners and government officials. Security operatives closed the U.S. aid-funded station last week without explanation. That's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Damme.
That's our show for this Tuesday. We now take you to West Nile in Uganda with the song Morina Opidri by Lanson Lee. We have been listening to Lanson Lee with the song Morina Opidri, which means God is strong. I am John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.